upholding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captain of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. Were included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. Greetings from Technocracy News and Trends. This is Patrick Wood, the editor-in-chief and founder of Technocracy News, here to speak again about several aspects of modern technocracy. I want to start off by saying that many of the articles and things that we put up on Technocracy News are not necessarily directly related or immediately and easily related to historic technocracy, which was an economic system, that was based on resources rather than on price. And what I mean by that is instead a regular market economy would regulate things according to scarcity and price. Those two work together to limit the consumption of items that become scarce as the price goes up. And this is the key feature of a price-based free enterprise type of an economic system. Technocracy was completely opposite to that. It wanted to do away with price completely, wanted to do away with money completely and cash and all the things we're familiar with in a price-based economic system. They wanted to have a resource-based economic system that was based on allocation of all resources, whether they be water or all the way down to metals, to energy, to oil, and so on. And it was to be regulated by energy. They figured that everything in society takes energy to happen. So if they control energy, why they would control the economic system altogether. And I think they were correct in that assumption. But the economic system that they designed has morphed and changed, and technology has come along to allow them to implement those things that did not exist back then. The technology did not exist. Computers have advanced so far since 1932, it's just indescribable. However, as things have matured with technology, we see all kinds of little splinter things, splinter issues that do relate to technocracy indirectly, because the mindset of technocracy has taken hold all throughout the earth in the form of sustainable development. Now, this is a doctrine that's been fleshed out, sliced and diced six ways to Sunday for decades. And primarily, the United Nations, actually principally, the United Nations has been the purveyor of modern sustainable development. It is, however, functionally equivalent to historic technocracy. So as we talk about some issues and post some articles on Technocracy News, you may not immediately catch the connection between the economic system of technocracy and the practical issues that we're dealing with today. So I hope we can change that. I hope we can discuss connecting the dots as we go along. I want to start out today with a minor story about robots. Everybody loves a good robot, right? Well, maybe. But robots are increasingly encroaching into the construction industry. That is, yes, physical construction industry, buildings and structures and so on. And the deployment of construction robots, which is just gaining steam today like never before in history, is displacing people who are construction workers. Now, I'm not going to be critical of anything about construction workers, because we need construction workers, and some people have chosen to make that profession. They're very good at it. But construction workers typically work with their hands, and they have to use their mind to figure out architectural drawings and stuff like that. But generally speaking, the people that get bounced out of the construction industry are very difficult to retrain. It's a hard field to work in, for one, very physically demanding. And after years of being conditioned to be outside and to be involved with physical labor like that, if you suddenly find yourself unemployed, it's very difficult to get back into the employment force again. Now, the global elite recognize that. The companies who are making robotics and designing all these fancy machines to replace workers in the construction field, they realize that people will be displaced, and they themselves have come up with the idea of a new class of people in society called the unemployables. The unemployables are unable to find a job or unable to work for a number of reasons just discussed. And they're not going to be caught in the safety net of unemployment because that runs out after a period of time. So the global elite have come up with this great idea of universal basic income. Well, let's just give them money. And if we just give them money, they'll have enough to live, but at least they'll be out of our hair, I suppose. And universal basic income is now found to be faltering all around the world. Everybody, all the countries that are experimenting with UBI are finding out, oops, it doesn't work like we thought it would work. So the technocrats are going to have to go back to the drawing board to figure this out if they think they can find some kind of a scientific solution. Of course, the money that they wanted to give to the unemployables was not their money. It was taxpayer money, which is kind of ironic because they're making all of their money and their billions off of the technology that they're using to turn society upside down. So the article number one that I'm referencing here is Deployment of Construction Robots Displacing Laborers. It's a good background article. It's actually referencing a study that was created by a research firm called Tractica. They have analyzed various aspects of the construction industry and how it relates to robots and so on. And there's many different aspects to this, by the way. There's demolition, there's bricklaying, there's drilling, there's 3D printing, there's rebar tying, all of these things. Plus workers now are getting equipped with exoskeletons and what they call assistant robots that kind of fit on your body, I guess, that makes it easier to lift heavy loads. Now, I can see where that's kind of a cool thing. If you could have some kind of an exoskeleton and be able to lift, let's say, 300 pounds of some material without any sweat, that would be very cool. Okay, so that's story number one. Second story is odd as well because we've been talking about the cashless society for some time. There has been a global push to strip cash out of society. This is under the whole heading of FinTech, F-I-N-T-E-C-H, which stands for financial technology. And big tech companies around the world have been developing payment systems that will supplant, or they think will supplant, cash. So we see countries in Europe and cities in Europe that have experimented with this. Sweden is leading the pack on this, I think. Even they are having problems right now. And the Minister of Finance recently said everybody needs to hoard cash, notes and coin and so on, in case the digital system goes down. They all of a sudden figured it out that, hey, if our network goes down, how can people buy and sell? They can't. This sounds a little bit like the Mark of the Beast in the Book of Revelation, doesn't it? It's coming at us from a back door. But even they're figuring it out. So they're saying to their own people now, in spite of the move to cashlessness, hey, hoard banknotes and hoard coins because you'll need them in an emergency if everything goes to pot. So here's the odd thing here that's happening. San Francisco, liberal, crazy San Francisco, one of the most liberal cities on planet Earth, has decided to ban credit-only stores. Yes, there's many stores in San Francisco, especially down in the financial district, that have said, we're not going to take cash anymore. And they mostly serve the elite that work in the financial district that are all plugged into the latest mobile payment technology and stuff off their smartphones, I'm sure. And they just did away with cash. Well, the city council now in San Francisco, liberal as they are, said, you know, this is really hurting our tourist trade and it's hurting our city's tax base and so on because they're not dealing with cash. And some people are being squeezed out of the economic system because they cannot use cash. So they passed an ordinance. They said, no more cash-free stores. You want to get your business license back next cycle? Then start accepting cash. That's pretty humorous that one of the first cities in America, major city, to kick back against the cashless move of San Francisco, but they have. And in addition, remember just recently, a few days ago, that it was San Francisco along with Oakland who were pushing back against facial recognition technology. They're saying, no, this is an invasion of privacy, and we're not sure we like that. We're just going to outlaw that too. Well, here you have two major things, two major memes in the globalist playbook that are being pushed back against by two of the most liberal cities in America. Yeah, go figure. we'll take a victory anywhere we get it for any reason, even if it was for some other reason, I suppose, and what we might conclude. But there you go. So San Francisco, next time you go there, take cash. You'll be able to use it everywhere you go. The last story, and a key story today, concerns Quayside, a new smart city being built by Sidewalk Labs up in Toronto. This has been in the news many times in the last couple of years now, from the planning phase all the way into where they are now. But Quayside has been a lightning rod for criticism for all kinds of reasons, and most of them are very good reasons. One is the extremely high cost of implementing a smart city from scratch. It's just incredibly expensive. And the question, who is going to live there? Basically, even though they're making room for a lot of people to live there, only the rich will be able to afford it. There will be no poor living in Quayside. There will be no non-professional people living in Quayside. So they're taking fire on that over as well as on privacy issues. Toronto is learning a hard lesson about public-private partnerships, because that's what this is. They made a deal with Sidewalk Labs, which is one of the sister companies of Google, by the way. They made a deal with a commercial company to build this smart city experiment from scratch. And they gave them the real estate to do it and the licenses and all that kind of stuff to do it. And now Toronto finds itself caught between a rock and a hard place. If it throws Quayside and Sidewalk Labs out of its city, it's going to have a huge public relations nightmare. On the other hand, if it keeps it, it's going to have a huge citizen backlash issue to deal with. So they don't know which way to turn. But this is the nature of public-private partnerships, by the way. When a city makes deals with commercial firms that may or may not be there next year or may or may not do what you like them to do, and it turns south on you, the deal turns sour, but they put the money in it, the city just gave the favors, who gets to deal with the hubris when the commercial company bails? Well, it's the city and it's the citizens, you see. Yeah, and that's what they're going to be dealing with up there. This thing is going to deteriorate to the point where it's a festering sore that they cannot get rid of. And they'll be dealing with a hubris of this for many years to come. The article says, Quayside would be outfitted with robotic garbage collection, snow-melting sidewalks, and self-driving taxi bots. Sensors would capture data on park bench usage, air quality, and more, aimed at making the neighborhoods more livable. It was handshakes and smiles all around when Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and officials from Sidewalk Labs gathered here 18 months ago to announce the data-driven city of tomorrow. But internal discord and public criticism are threatening the project. Quote, I don't think they look so happy now, said Paula Fletcher, a Toronto City Council member. This big idea isn't going exactly the way it was planned. And it gets worse from there in the article. I won't bore you with the article, but Quayside is a perfect example of why we do not want smart city makeover on any of our cities in America. Any city that turns over the retrofitting of their infrastructure to big tech companies like Sidewalk Labs, be it Google, be it Amazon, be it NVIDIA, Siemens, or any other company, are crazy. Because in the end of it, when it doesn't go the way they think, they're going to be stuck with it, and they're going to pay twice for it. You know the old adage, there's always time to do it over, but there's never time to do it right. Well, I want to tell you and explain to you the fundamental flaw in city design as far as smart city technology is concerned. And this comes from my book, Technocracy, the Hard Road to World Order, in the chapter titled The Smart City Steamroller. This was a surprise to me when I researched for this chapter and started researching city design and urban planning and stuff. I am not an urban planner, by the way. But critics have been taking shots at these various cities around the world, smart cities. Songdo is one in South Korea. And I write on page 61, critics have less than glowing assessments for Songdo. The International New Town Institute, based in the Netherlands, states, this is a quote from their journal, these cities, Songdo, look like the CIAM, Siam-inspired modernist cities from the 1960s, as if we'd learned nothing over the last half century of urban planning innovation. This typology was indeed once seen as a panacea for cities everywhere, but is now considered a failed model that has cost some communities a heavy price. Many sociologists and historians now blame this model for rising crime rates, social exclusion, limited access to public amenities, and heightened class divisions. Now, what SIAM is, C-I-A-M, it refers to the International Congresses of Modern Architecture that operated between 1928 and 1959, and where famous architects of that day posed as urban planners. SIAM projects failed miserably, and its entire urban design philosophy was largely discredited. Leading intellectuals of the day heavily promoted SIAM as the new approach to planning human settlements. Barbara Ward, Margaret Mead, Buckminster Fuller, and Arnold Toynbee. Those are some of the people that were involved with SIAM. The Newtown Institute finally concluded that the, quote, planned towns and cities we now see coming up across Asia and Africa are almost exclusively for the wealthy, because they're using, and this is just my comment, they are using SIAM as their philosophy of building cities. In other words, they ripped it off from the 1960s. It had already failed, had been completely discredited by 1960. The main architectural organization had closed down by that time. From page 63, an insightful book called Against the Smart City by Adam Greenfield analyzes the modern smart city and concludes this, quote, the notion of the smart city in its full contemporary form appears to have originated within these businesses rather than any party, group, or individual recognized for their contributions to the theory or practice of urban planning. That is, the enterprises enumerated here are to a surprisingly great degree responsible for producing both the technical systems on which the smart city is founded and the rhetoric that binds them together as a conceptual whole. A respected urban planning expert, Greenfield, further explains that the ideas at the core of today's smart city practice originated during the 80 years between 1880 and 1960, when the so-called high modernism in urban planning was incubated, hatched, and ultimately failed. Quote, the description of the serene and masterful guidance of the city as machine for living we hear about from Siemens or Cisco or IBM are strikingly reminiscent of SIAM. What we see in the smart city material across the board is a straight and occasionally even naive rendition of tropes that were taken to pieces 50 years ago. So you see, the problem with modern smart city design is that these big tech companies that are implementing this technology have pawned themselves off as urban planners, brilliant urban planners at that. Why, we're going to build utopia, they say. This whole concept failed by 1960. And yet, these people have learned nothing since then on how to correctly or acceptably use this technology in the course of urban design. This is the problem. Cities around the world, cities in America especially, any size city needs to recognize that the model of urban planning that's kicking around in the heads of these people are absolutely crackpot, and they have been proven to be failures in the past. They were totally rejected by the urban planning community. This is the best they have to bring back and say, well, we got it all figured out now. We have high technology now. We can do what they couldn't do back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. We're smarter than that now, somehow. I don't think so. Everywhere you look at these cities, whether it's Songdo or this one at Quayside, Bill Gates is spearheading a big project in Arizona just to the west side of Phoenix, where he's building a city from scratch, a smart city to be called Belmont. They haven't broken ground yet, but we're watching it very closely here in Arizona. So when Smart City Makeover comes to your city, you need to have a copy of Technocracy, The Hard Road to World Order in your hand to take to your city council and say, don't do this. Don't let these people come in and convince you that they're legitimate urban planners who have some kind of a new idea that's guaranteed to work. it is not guaranteed to work. Moreover, it's guaranteed to fail because it failed miserably in the past for the very same reasons. Can't say much more about it. Quayside will continue to be in the news in the future. We'll be following it closely at Technocracy News and Trends. I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. Have a great day.